and Radio Australia. Let's stay with Northern Development now. How does the lure of 3 years paying no income tax at all sound to you? Or if you run a business, maybe wiping a third off what you pay to the government. That probably sounds reasonably good as well. That's what Australians for Northern Development and Economic Vision has asked the federal government to consider in a bid to boost development in Australia's north. ANDEV, as it's also known, is a lobby group set up by mining magnate Gina Rinehart, which has put it in a submission asking for tax breaks to the joint. It put the submission into the Joint Select Committee on Northern Australia, which is about to start its public hearings across the north of the country. ANDEV co-chair Imance Kins joined me earlier.
Basically, you know, we started off really wanting to raise people's awareness about the potentiality in the north, and then looking at a range of policy settings that can fundamentally act as a catalyst for long-term sustained economic growth. And, the catalysts are, things like reduced taxation, one-stop shops, one agency, looking at more streamlined regulatory frameworks, and also removing foreign investment thresholds so that we can really get a significant increase in investment, because that fundamentally is what drives economic growth.
You've raised the idea of no income tax being charged for a period of 3 years. What difference would that make to people living in the Northern Territory?
Well, it makes a significant difference in terms of attracting people and businesses and significant investment. I mean, basically, we were looking at the Northern Territory because, you know, in terms of the number of people that actually live and work in the territory, the complete abolition of, say, for example, personal income tax for a certain period, say 3 years, would have a negligible impact on the federal budget. And we know from experience that it's likely that within that three-year time period that the increase in investment, the increase in jobs, would actually see taxation revenues rise for the federal and state governments.
So do you think that would be a strong enough incentive to convince Australian workers, to some of them, to relocate to the Northern Territory?
Well, you have to have jobs up there. I mean, fundamentally, you have to have jobs. So it comes with investment too. I mean, it changes the due diligence that investors undertake in terms of, where are they going to invest. I mean, that's really the driver. And obviously, it would attract people. I mean, we want to see younger people move up into the north. We really want to kickstart the traditional Australian pioneering spirit that Banjo Paterson has written about so beautifully in so many of his poems.
But presumably, the people and the businesses in the Northern Territory would still be looking for the services that are funded by federal government, whether that's through housing or contributions to education. Why is it fair that the rest of Australia, in the short term at least, pays for those services in the Northern Territory?
Well, you can apply that equity argument to any government policy setting. There's always some distributional impact, with government settings. So, I think if people run that argument, then there should be no government incentives on anything. I mean, there's always a situation, and I think Australians also, Galaxy ran polls for us where, the majority of Australians wanted to see a special economic zone in the north, who realised that there hasn't been enough focus on the north by governments. So, it also is a case of people not being so fundamentally selfish and saying, okay, look, there is this big underdeveloped area in the north of Australia. They should have some sort of incentive to bring them up to the living standards of the rest of us. And people forget that, the majority of the Indigenous community lives in the north.
The special economic zone proposed by ANDEV is for the Northern Territory. Why is it just for the territory?
The submission to the Select Committee talks about one. I mean, the optimal position is for the whole of the northern Australia from the 26th parallel to be one big special economic zone,
which is legally very difficult.
That constitutional situation is interesting. I mean, the local government and shires association of New South Wales back in the early 2000s asked for advice on sections 51 and 99, And the advice that came back to them was the constitutional provisions are limited, and it really depends on the method of delivery of the assistance.
But the argument goes that constitutionally it's doubtful whether or not a special economic zone could be applied in the north of WA and Queensland, and so the concern from WA is that somewhere like the Kimberley suffers if we see this these concessions put in place in the Northern Territory. It's a legitimate concern, isn't it?
Well, I think it's quite small-minded. If there was complementary legislation from the federal, state, and territories, depending on where the special economic zone was, I'm sure this can be overcome. And why not? Let's test it. I mean, you know, there's over 3,000 special economic zones around the world, and we've had, you know, if you read a book about Deng Xiaoping about the transformation of China, I mean, special economic zones started in 1978 in Shenzhen. They're the drivers, and China's still establishing these special economic zones. Yet in Australia, if somebody raises the issue of a special economic zone, suddenly it's all too hard and impossible and nothing's going to happen. Well, you know, let's be a little bit ambitious and visionary about this situation. Let's give it a shot.
Is that one of your arguments in favour of these, the fact that if Australia needs special economic zones so it can effectively compete with China?
That's part of the story. Well, not necessarily China, but just be competitive. I mean, it's about being a catalyst. You know, these special economic zones don't stay there forever. I mean, we're talking about a catalyst.
One of the criticisms, I'm sure you've heard it, is that it's people like yourself who's previously had interests in mining and exploration, and Gina Reinhardt, who advocates for this as well, who would be some of the key beneficiaries from this, that this is all a push for the mining and resources industry to pay less tax. It's true that people with resources interests would benefit from such a change, isn't it?
It's a bit short-sighted to say that because someone has a business interest in the north of Australia, they can't express an interest or have a vision about how the whole Northern Territory can be developed.
And I guess the question is the motive for that interest.
Well, I can tell you the motive is not selfish. There's definitely not selfish, and I mean the motive is a personal, subjective issue anyway. But I can assure you that this is a, you know, we're all volunteers. None of us are getting paid for the work that we do in this area.
Immense Kins is the co-chair of Australians for Northern Development and Economic Vision. I should say that Immense has held previous positions and directorships with mining and exploration companies. He's told me he no longer holds those positions, but still is a consultant to the resources sector. To further this debate on the idea of tax-free zones in Northern Australia, I'm joined by Professor John Quiggin, economist from the University of Queensland, and Dr. Simon Longstaff, an ethicist and executive director of the St. James Ethics Centre. Welcome to you both. John, I'll start with you. As an economist, what do you make of the suggestion that the Northern Territory could be a tax-free zone?
This is just an appalling idea. There's no particular reason for picking the Northern Territory. I mean, why not pick Western New South Wales or Geelong or Tasmania?
Because legally it's easier, I guess.
Well, they could do it for Tasmania, I suppose. I don't know. But the whole idea of picking out some particular part of the country and saying, we're going to give you special handouts, we're going to give your industry, which is already, of course, very favourably treated, yet more incentives and special treatment, goes against the whole thrust of economic policy over the past 30 years.
But it would incentives such as these would attract investment to the area, wouldn't it?
Well, they'd attract investment to the area and away from other parts of Australia, as you point out in the interview. If the Northern Territory gets it and other parts of Northern Australia don't, it'll be those parts of Northern Australia that lose most. If it's the whole of Northern Australia above some arbitrary line, it's people, say, farmers in southwest Queensland will lose because farmers in northwest Queensland are getting this special treatment.
Immense Kins pointed to a Galaxy poll saying the majority of Australians support a special economic zone. Do you think most Australians would support such a zone?
Well, it's important to remember that the term special economic zone has a lot of meanings. In most cases, what it refers to is in a country with exceptionally high tariffs or restrictions on imports, like communist China or the US after the huge tariff increases that were put into place in the Depression, you carve out a little bit of the country that's not subject to those tariffs and they import and export. Now, Australia has the lowest tariffs in the world. A special economic zone of that sense would make, in the usual sense, would have no impact at all. In fact, we already have special economic zones established, I think, in Darwin and suggested for Townsville. Those have almost no input, whereas saying people in one part of the country can get away without paying any income tax, but still, of course, get massive Commonwealth funding. The Northern Territory is one of the biggest net gainers from the Commonwealth already. That's totally different from the ordinary concept of an economic zone.
John, why are we so determined to grow the North?
Well, that's a good question. The North is, large parts of it are growing very well, very conveniently by themselves. There's no obvious reason why we need to push that process along as opposed to generally promoting the welfare of the Australian people.
Dr. Simon Longstaff of the St. James Ethics Centre, what's your view about the idea that some regions could be exempt from paying income tax? What kind of ethical dilemmas does that raise?
Well, there's some. Look, my own personal experience speaks to this to some degree. When I left school, just after I'd turned 17, I was working up on Groot Island as a cleaner. And there was a thing called a zone allowance back in those days, which meant that you paid a lesser rate of income tax than other people in Australia. But that was not because there was a special economic concession being made. It was simply out of recognition that the level of government services that citizens would normally have access to were not available in those remote places. And so that gives you a bit of a clue as to how you begin to think about this. The idea that you might offset a failure to provide government services by tax relief is in fact a precedent which has been established and is probably fair. But that world that I was in is very different now to the Northern Territory, where for the vast majority of people, particularly in the major areas, you know, they're well served by government and you would expect them to pay their fair share in relation to tax.
You wouldn't accept the argument that the isolation and the cost of living makes them severely disadvantaged?
Look, there may be some, and I think that that notion of a zone allowance where the kind of benefits that you derive are diminished considerably is an argument worth making. That's not to say you shouldn't pay anything, though. I mean, the fact that I don't have crime in my particular life or my kids aren't at school doesn't mean that I don't have a general benefit which society has to provide. But the other more general point about these debates is that the only way you could ever justify such a proposition is if you had an absolute assurance that it didn't cause disadvantage to other Australians and that it actually increased the net stock of common good that was being provided from this kind of investment. And the trouble is that whenever you have governments making those sorts of special allowances where it's supposedly going to generate superior public benefits, the record is very poor of them actually doing it. There's heaps of cases where there have been subsidies or benefits provided and there have been lots of promises made about jobs to be created and other things, and it hasn't actually happened. In fact, the benefits have flowed to a relatively small number of people rather than to the community as a whole.
Do the ethics of the debate change when you consider who's proposing the idea? And I'm referring to the fact that the chair of ANDEV is Gina Rinehart.
Not really. I mean, I think, as fellow was saying before, you know, you take account of that, but there's no reason why a person in wealthy and powerful can't be motivated to some degree by a disinterested view about where the public interest would be best served. But that once they've made their case, it's over to other people who are less affected by it to make a disinterested judgment. You know, governments and others have got to be thinking about the general benefit for society. And as John was pointing out, you know, you do this kind of thing and you've got an arbitrary line where the people just below it may actually suffer detriment because of what you're trying to do in this case. Now, if you could be absolutely confident that there were benefits going to be delivered and that they're going to the people who needed them, the community, and not be, if you like, socialising the cost of the tax being foregone and privatising the upside for people in business, then you might consider it, but you'd... The record on people delivering on those promises is not good.
John Quiggin, if you made it clear you don't support this idea, but it's an idea that both major political parties seem to back, at least developing the North and using some kinds of incentives to attract business to the area. Why do you think it's politically such a favourable idea?
Well, it certainly has a lot of political appeal. Of course, lots of bad ideas have political appeal. I think... there's been a long tradition of attempts to do this kind of thing, which, of course, are worth considering. We've had things like the Ord River scheme, which chewed up very large amounts of public money without delivering much in the way of benefits. And we've had these things like zone allowances, largely, as Simon said, to offset the lack of provision of public services. But I think... if people actually look at this proposal and go away from the generalities of developing the North, which basically is a good idea and, of course, is happening, and say this is actually a massive corporate welfare for a group who are already, in Ms. Reinhart's case, doing very well indeed, and that's true of the mining sector in general, I think that the generality of favouring developing the north is very different from the specifics of this massive handout.
Imantz Kins made mention of China's special economic zones and pointed to the fact they've been successful. Do you agree with that?
Well, again, this was a communist country in which imports were essentially forbidden, and they opened up zones where you could import materials from overseas, process them and export them. That has nothing to do with the suggestion he's putting forward of giving people in a particular region a massively favourable tax treatment.
Simon Longstaff, do you believe that there is any way such a proposal could help the Indigenous communities of the Northern Territory?
Look, if you were able to structure a proposal which was progressive, a bit like, you know, the taxation system itself is, so that the benefits that flowed from what concessions were made were in fact being provided to people like the Indigenous community or others who, you know, are at the lower end of the socioeconomic ladder, and I'd need some convincing that that was actually going to be delivered, then you might actually consider that. But if you were, as I say, socialising these costs, which is saying that people in the Northern Territory don't have to bear their fair share of things like defence and all the other things, foreign affairs, all the other things that Australia does, while all the benefits were effectively being privatised with a particular focus flowing into a few hands, then you couldn't really justify it. I can't see from that point of view. It removes some of the basic obligations and responsibilities of citizens. It creates a different class of citizen in the country. And the only way that you could really make allowance for that is to take account of particular cases of disadvantage which you are seeking to remedy.
Simon, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Dr. Simon Longstaff, Executive Director of the St. James Ethics Centre. And John, thank you so much for coming in as well. Appreciate that. Professor John Quiggin is an economist from the University of Queensland. You're listening to Bush Telegraph. Cameron Wilson with you. You're on RN.